Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members. As the chair has indicated, my name is Didiso Mantubela, and I'm the DDU responsible for hydrocarbons and energy planning. First of all, I'd like to tender an apology to the committee on behalf of the Director General. She is having to brief the acting minister on some issues. The Minister of Energy is in Vienna attending the International Atomic Energy Agency annual general conference. I've been asked to talk about the LPG regulation. I think members would recall that for some time now, we have indicated as a department that we are unhappy about the price of LPG, particularly that the price that is charged to the consumer. The 9 kilogram is the one that we particularly focus on. because that is the one that is widely used for cooking. And the current price, we believe, is just exorbitant. And then we embarked on a process of trying to understand the value chain of LPG, particularly in the distribution. Because when we engage with the, you know, with the players in the sector, they then indicated that some of the costs, you know, are justified. And when we conducted our own pilot, we then found out that there are ways of reducing some of those costs. We then proceeded, we've now drafted a regulation, and that regulation came back from the state law advisor yesterday with some comments, and we believe that the comments are minor. We would be ready to come and present that regulation, because there were no changes to the figures that we are proposing, because what we are proposing is to regulate the price. Of course, when we do that, we believe that members of the industry will come back, will be quite unhappy, because the reduction that is proposed is higher than 30%, and the actual figure will, I think at this stage, I would not be able to indicate the final figure as the regulation has not yet been promulgated, but I can indicate that it's going to be at least 30% less than what is currently being charged to the consumer. We do expect that there will be a lot of interaction with the members of the industry, because some of the assumptions that we have used, they may find that actually we have been overly conservative. However, we believe that in the interest of making this particular form of energy accessible to all, this is the right approach to follow. We don't think the big players in particular will have difficulty with the price that is proposed. We do, however, think that the small players may find it difficult to adjust, but we believe that at the end of the day, it's the consumer as well as the sustainability of the industry that should be driving the prices in the sector. Okay, I'm not sure if that is sufficient. As indicated, we only got confirmation from the state law advisor yesterday, and we have to then work in their comments, but the comments don't affect really the proposed price. They just deal with matters of language, legal language and so on. Thanks. Yes.
Okay, thanks very much. Obviously, here's the response to the discussion on the
Thanks. I think that we welcome the fact that there is a response, but I think we'd like the response to just be a little more clearer about time frame. When will they come and present? Look this is only just a few wording changes. I think the key thing is to try to have a clear time frame on this issue. With your original comment, I think it still stands that there's a question of relationship. But given what the department has said, clearly there's going to be a bit of a drawn out process of interaction with industry on the matter. So that should also delay when the regulations come into effect.
In terms of time frame, in terms of going from where we are now to actual promulgation, we wouldn't expect that to take more than 2 weeks, because you know, it's really now presenting the outcomes of the deliberation to the state law advisor, to the minister, and then the regulation would go to the government printers for promulgation. That is, if, you know, we get then approval from the minister. What we're proposing to do is to have the regulation that indicates that there will be a maximum price, and then the interaction that will follow with the members of the industry is basically one. We don't believe that should take longer than a month, because what we're going to be interacting on are the working rules, not the regulation itself. Because similarly with fuel, with the liquid fuel petrol, we have a set of working rules that we then use, and those are separate from a regulation. Those working rules, there we discuss, you know, acceptable you know, retail margins, acceptable cost, and so on. And we have had discussions with industry, as was indicated. This process has been long drawn out, and it would be a matter really now of showing them that this is what we found in our pilot project, and they participated in that pilot project themselves. And you know, we have evidence to support what the price that will come to. So we don't think that process should take longer than 30 days, and in fact in practice in any draft regulation. So we do something similar with the working rules. We engage with them on a workshop on liquid fuel, and we come to, you know, some conclusion, and the working rules for petrol are then published. The last one was published in November last year. And to come to a conclusion on those rules didn't take us a long time at all.
Okay, but I think we have said that we have either as an interaction or as a group to the colleagues with an interesting, but now you're not looking over at all these 2 weeks, 5 months. I think next month we should be able to give you discuss the each company and then something like that. Our one is there.
Okay, check. Chair would be prepared to even come and make a presentation on the regulation, and also then the one that is then promulgated.
No, that's okay. With them, we have a problem with choice, and of course, you have a problem. There are so many translations in the next group that of course you wouldn't answer it. As of now, I think people have had the project for their crisis on the same school and the same cases of crisis. So we will start and see if we have a problem. It's true that it's not going to be a problem. But thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the progress report.
Thank you.
Why would the MPs have a case that we told the games of Parliament the whole thing, and then we actually put at the cutting here or when it's done or something? So this was a very good idea of the game. So this was going to be our normal game to come to case the own resources. But in the end, we have been able to prove that Parliament is going to surprise why we are here.
We told you to order to the block. Even for me.
Thank you, Jen, and good morning, honorable members. My name is Ongia Pani. I'm from the Department of Energy. I'm the acting Deputy Director General for Electricity, Nuclear, and Clean Energy, and as directed by the committee, I'm going to take you through a presentation around the rate, an update around the rate process, the regional distribution, electricity structural process that you are familiar with. So my presentation will cover the following aspects. It will be the essence of the Constitution 7th Amendment Bill, some motivation around why we wanted to do that, what we have done in relation to stakeholder engagement around this bill, an update of the RED model, and then the actual content at a high level of the rate submission bill. So I must also apologize for my principles, as already indicated by Mr. Cabela, but also to indicate that there is a new directive around branding, given that we are now the Department of Energy and not the Department of Mineral and Energy. So when you see the Department of Mineral and Energy, just a logistics out kind of problem that we'd like to see ourselves as the Department of Energy. So please forgive the fact that the what you might see on the branding in the presentation is different. Okay, the essence of the bill. We're talking here about the Constitution 7th Amendment Bill of 2009, and this emanated from a cabinet decision of April 2008 to enable for other committees to change the Constitution or amend the Constitution in order to enable EI restructuring. And pursuant to this, the EI restructuring interdepartmental task team was set up to develop the bill amending the Constitution. And this is a product of the collaborative effort between the respective government departments. In other words, in terms of, prudent intergovernmental relations, Department of Energy, Mineral and Energy Bank, National Treasury, local government at this point, and so on. All these stakeholders were engaged in a process to determine how to tackle this problem as well. The bill is broad in general in its application, and it has been triggered as a means to facilitate achievement of regional efficiencies and economies of scale within the EDI in particular. The point here is that it is a lot more far-reaching than just the electricity side of things. It's a constitutional amendment. It seeks to vest national government with new powers of intervention at local government level to achieve regional efficiency and economic scale instead of municipal functions, as already indicated. And at the practical level, it is an insertion of a new subsection 1A in section 156 of the Constitution, for those that have a copy of the Constitution in front of you. And this new subsection, it is 156-1A, is designed to facilitate regionalization of municipal functions when necessary. As I already indicated, it could be electricity, it could be water, and so on. The proposed new section to allow national governments to further regulate executive authority of local government in certain circumstances, for example, when municipalities, whether the municipal function can be provided more effectively on a regional basis than on a local basis. The example we'd like to give here is one that relates to electricity, where it does not respect political boundaries and tends to be prudently delivered on a regional scale rather than on a local basis. The proposed new 156A is not expressly linked to the electricity function, for instance, it's just repeating the point that it is more far-reaching than just electricity. If I move on to the background of the decision, as indicated, it was made in April 2008, and the underlying rationale is as follows. Firstly, to enable EDI structures. Now, you might be aware, Chair, that since 2001, when a plan to restructure the EDI was approved by Cabinet in the blueprint, there's been a whole lot of things that have been put forward as the rationale. What will restructuring address, and why are we so intent on doing this restructuring? As we all are aware, the electricity industry is highly fragmented at the distribution level. We have 187 licensing municipalities given and take. We have, more than 2,000 tariffs, those that are in the north, and so on. We lose economies of scale as an outcome of the fragmentation. And as such, the loss of economies of scale within the municipalities, and that does not allow specialization in the delivery of the function. Skills is a big issue in the country, but it gets accentuated by the problem relating to fragmentation. There is a lot of underinvestment in the distribution network. In fact, what happens is that it's a cash cow that is used to fund other municipal services. As mentioned, the point of our tariff is not only the fact that there are lots of them, but there are very big disparities in the way that they are applied. Famous example here is in the East Rand between a company called Air Liquid and another one called Liquid Air, just across the road from each other, where the one was 40% more for the tariff than the other. And from a competition point of view, you can imagine why. If two competitors playing in the across the road, 40% differential between the tariffs. Electrification is a big problem. We still have some 20% to go in the country. And one of the biggest problems is the ability to fast-track the quest for the electrical market. And it is the fact that certain municipalities are more responsive simply because of a better economic base than others. Cabinet then approved on 25 October 2006 the 6th wall-to-wall race to be implemented. I'm not going to go into the details and debate around how the model was conceived, but there were a whole lot of considerations that ultimately led to the 6th wall-to-wall race model being established. As public entities to be regulated in accordance with the PFMA and the Electricity Regulation Act. ESCOM would be a shareholder in the respective place for a transitional period, and then ESCOM would ultimately reduce their shareholding or exit the place. Well, shall I say, just reduce the shareholding over time. A company, project company, media holding, was then charged with the responsibility to oversee the establishment of the date. And as you've indicated, Ted has already made a presentation to the committee. One of the issues the cabinet underscored was the need to deal with the capital investment requirement of the rate. In other words, this was underscored as a priority irrespective of whether we formed the rate or not. Capital investment in the sector is very lacking. And a roadmap had been presented to cabinet to move from the current scenario into the future industry, the cabinet had noted that. But even more significantly, and I suppose this is the point of the presentation today, is that cabinet noted that the EDI restructuring process was best supported by an instrument of legislation, the EDI restructuring legislation needed to be introduced in order to create these days. And then the last point was about the national electricity pricing system and the need to develop it. If you go back to that time, you know, we did not have an electricity pricing policy. There was a very, if you like, a different approach to how the electricity service was charged for by ESCOM differently from municipalities and so on. And cabinet directed that we must fast track on that electricity pricing system that we electricity developed. So, I'm not going to dwell much on this except to illustrate and to refresh your memories around how we will look in the secret. And suffice to say that, as you can see, it's anchored by the metropolitan municipalities and it does not respect political boundaries. It's based on a whole lot of considerations, either on just political. If I go carry on with the rationale to enable EDI restructuring and to also give some feedback around progress today. I came since 2001 to restructure EDI in the current constitutional framework has proven very unsuccessful. So in Cape Town, 2006, rate one was established and was subsequently liquidated, mainly because of the loose agreements that have been put in place. Due to the legislative expense of local government power and functions and provided as relates to electricity. But this was premised largely on a deal between the City of Cape Town and ESCOM. And I think to complete the picture, ESCOM also had imposed certain preconditions for their participation in the red one, which preconditions had not been met. We were therefore very clear that the restructuring of the EDI on a voluntary basis means that the participation of local government is ad hoc and therefore unpredictable. And if local government did not participate, there was no guarantee that they would remain in the red. Or rather, if they did participate, there was no sort of locking mechanism. And as such, you know, the risk of the restructuring process trading on indefinitely remained very high, and we inevitably that would result in very high cost. Now, what does this constitutional amendment mean for EDI restructuring? As indicated, it will give national government sufficient power of intervention at local government level when it is necessary to achieve regional efficiencies and economic scale. So if you allow me, I would like to perhaps divert a little bit on this point and indicate that we're saying that this is what the constitutional amendment or this is what national government power of intervention will entail, and we are aligned to the constitutional provision relating to Section 139, which allow for national government to make intervention subject to certain processes and follow. So we're not taking this frivolously. We're saying that those powers in the Constitution need to be enhanced even further. And that's why we're taking this constitutional amendment. Secondly, is that the constitutional amendment will enable the EDIS structuring bill to be introduced, which I will touch on in some detail later on, so as to accelerate the restructuring and to reduce the cost of restructuring. So as such, it will not be necessary to negotiate separate deals with the license and municipalities that are currently providing the service and the functions. Carrying on, national government will have that ability to do the things that are listed here, starting with the EDR restructuring implementation into six wall-to-wall grids in accordance with the blueprint, regulation of the industry more effectively, which would allow the setting and approving of tariffs in a manner that allows appropriate investment in the distribution of assets. So the intention is to leave local government with its appropriate power, and those pertain to the equitable share allocation as an example, their power to apply surcharges in terms of Section 229 of the Constitution, and to retain local accountability for service delivery. We're saying that you want to leave those intact. But you also want to empower the rate to overcome the fragmentation that I referred to achieve integration under a merged kind of dispensation as opposed to current fragmentation. You want to be able to allow regional planning. You want to be able to execute business plans on the basis of sound budgets that are premised on sound planning. That's what we want to empower the rate to be able to do. And I guess it's a question of striking the right balance between those considerations. Perhaps, in my opinion, this is one of the most critical outcomes that we're seeking to achieve through this, which is the economic regulation for the electricity sector in particular. And it's the fact that as it obtains the current regulatory framework governing the EDI, it's open to dispute. There is the Electricity Regulation Act, which was since amended to include the or to cover municipalities under the Electricity Regulation Amendment Act of 2007. Which gives NERSA the right to regulate the electricity regulation of licensing. NERSA consequently has the right to impose license conditions relating to the setting and approval of tariffs, but municipalities also have the regulatory power over articulation as derived from the Constitution and the Municipal Persons Act. And in terms of this legislation, it is explicitly stated that municipalities have the right and duty to set electricity tariffs. So you have this sort of contest between the powers and mandates of municipalities vis-à-vis the regulatory function of NERSA. The constitutional amendment and national legislation would therefore resolve the prevailing conflict by extending NERSA's authority over the entire electricity industry, you know, once and for all, not in any ambivalent manner. Regulation by NERSA will also address the inequity in tariffs, which is essential for business and economic development. So I think the point on this one is of relevance to the fact that we're all aware that we are embarking on a massive capital investment program in the country, which means there's going to be a lot of upward pressure on tariffs, and as we do that, what you want to do is to provide the necessary cushion for the poor so that they are insulated from those tariff increases that we then do. And under the current dispensation, we are very fearful that this will not be possible. And we saw a very clear example about 2-3 months ago with a 24% increase by ESCOM, which was part, you know, a food store, so to speak, to everybody. without due consideration about how it could be structured, pushing the poor and so on. It is those kind of regulatory concerns that we have, which this bill intends to address. The rationale is to facilitate the structuring of other municipal functions, JSR indicators, the regional efficiency, the economical scale, are prudent. They're not necessarily peculiar to electricity, but they could apply to water services as well as in the proposed amendments could facilitate. Just very quickly, in terms of what we've done around stakeholder engagement in the cabinet decisions, we have embarked on a robust stakeholder consultation process. There is a forum called the EDI Restructuring Interdepartmental Task Team, which has been widely consulted in the drafting of this bill. I'm not going to repeat, Chair, but I've indicated that it's everybody that is a relevant stakeholder in government, in SALGA, under the project leadership of EDI Holdings. And since 2008, there has been a lot of intensive work to try and, you know, come out with a collaborative product, as it was. We have now finalized the drafting of the Constitution 7th Amendment Bill. It has been presented to Cabinet, it's been approved, gone out for public comment on that side. It's now going into the parliamentary process very soon. I believe that the parliamentary process will be kickstarted for consultation and deliberation on the matter. There has been a whole lot of questions asked about the rate model, the fixed rate model as presented. And Chair, without going into detail about it, we just want to touch on some of the salient points about the model. And as indicated, the rate would be public entity as opposed to municipal entity, and they would be regulated under the PFMA and the Regulation Act, which means MERSA jurisdiction would be enhanced. ESCOM and municipalities will transfer the other assets and the liabilities into the rest. Shall we say they will transfer the businesses into the rest, including employees? Shareholding in the rest, by current asset owners, will be proportional to the value of the businesses transferred. Commercial transaction will be between ESCOM, municipalities, and the rest, or a proxy thereof. In other words, it could be national government playing facilitated roles and such. The rest would be new companies jointly owned by ESCOM, national government, and local government, and it's indicated ESCOM would reduce their shareholding over time. Now, against this rest model backdrop, Chair, there has been some questions, and I'll come to that maybe to conclude, but you also indicated all transfers of assets into the rate will be compensated. In other words, we do not see any destruction of value in the process of doing that. And because that compensation will be in the form of ordinary shares in the rate, and there will be some agreed compensation formula that will be agreed there between the municipalities, ESCOM, and government. There's a question about smaller contributors and the extent to which they might, or their compensation might translate into shareholding in the rest. Obviously, you want to end up with a product that is workable, you know, Chair, and sometimes it might be appropriate to make cash, you know, compensation or any other instruments like fixed interest bearing debt to compensate those smaller contributors. To ensure revenue neutrality for the current asset owner, yeah, foregone income will be payable to ESCOM and it will be phased out over time and later replaced with a dividend payout. And surcharges will be used as a proper revenue charge to recoup foregone income to municipalities. So basically, these are the proposals relating to how municipalities are going to be left revenue neutral and how ESCOM will also be kept whole in the process. Chair, these are the principles. The principle is that no municipality is expected to lose, you know, revenue as an outcome of this process, and that's why we're proposing those two interventions or instruments. Well, some of the details of the transaction is both a merger and a transfer of assets. So in some instances, there will be sales, in others there will be financial. What is the actual rent establishment bill to them? In other words, Chair, we're going beyond the change of the constitution without indicating why we want to do that. Otherwise, this creates this uncertainty as to the extent to which we want to abuse the process, some might say. The rate establishment bill will provide for, amongst others, the declaration of fixed rates in terms of the trading regions and so on, and it will be done by the Minister of Energy. They will be incorporated as companies in respect of each region, and they will be tasked with the distribution and trading of electricity within that region. As indicated, public entities that will be covered under the legislation, it will provide for the transfer of ESCOM distribution undertakings, at the same time as municipal undertakings into the REZ. It will provide for compensation to the asset contributors. It would provide for shareholding arrangements within the REZ. It would reflect on some of the government arrangements, including REZ board as a governance structure. It would also provide for municipalities to appoint REZ as service providers for electricity distribution within their area. In other words, the municipalities would enter into some service delivery agreements between themselves and the respective rates for service delivery. It would also provide for rate regulation under national jurisdiction in terms of the electricity regulation. So if I can just leave it at that maybe take some questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. But I think for future issues as well, I don't think that the question is not a question of the country.
We all want to see these events.
So why do we think how to such a flood of weird cash all the way? Why do we like to show?
Thank you, Minister. Behind the scenes of the legislation of the extensions of the program, it's basically that we want to interfere in local government. That means when they are not succeeding in distributing and also supplying the electricity that we need. I would like to refer you to slide number 30 of your speech, the one that talks about renewable EDI restructuring. And what's worrying me, it seems like we had a presentation of EDI holdings about a week or two ago. And what they present to us and what you present to totally different things. Especially if you take in the middle of the slide that section that say the powers that are going to stay at local government. EDI Holdings is telling us that they will collect all the money and so on. And then they will basically pay us a dividend for the share to each municipality. Here you say that local government to retain their equitable share allocation. Also to retain their power to supply surcharges. Now that might be a problem. This is especially where EDI only says they're going to collect the money and then they will pay out a certain amount of money each month. You will get money from EDI only. And especially the last section where you talk about the local accountability for service delivery. I think that was one of the main reasons why you want to take it away. We've got serious problems with maintenance and so on, and municipalities cannot do that. But here you still say that service delivery is local government, essential maintenance, selling of power, and so on. And these are totally different what PDI presented to us the other day. You will remember they talk to Madam Chair that they're going to get buildings, they're even going to use buildings of the municipalities and so on. And yet you want them to, now you say the service delivery is still up to the municipalities. If this is the case, it seems like you are leaving everything, there's something that the municipality is struggling with, you are leaving with the municipalities. But on the other hand, all you're doing is creating another company or companies that is going to cost a lot of money, but the essential service delivery, the surcharges, and so on, still stays with the municipality. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The honorable member has taken almost nearly everything that I wanted to say. But I just want, I'm also on the. I was also on the view of saying if nothing is taken away, the powers are still left with the municipality. Are they not going to manipulate the people by overcharging? And how are they going to be monitored if you leave everything with them? Because right now, with the problem of municipalities charging anything and guessing, when they charge, they do a guesswork. So how are you going to monitor this? Thank
you. You've got more than 1,000 type of programs that each municipality is according to what they want. I think it's a very complicated issue. Can you come in? Okay.
Action. The community aspect was related to one of the members in the national government. A presentation in a spelling is the it's only income that we shareholder base. But the extension that was given by the EDI as all the presentation actually says most parties are still going to be a shareholder. A contrary rate actually best level. question that I always had. In terms of the right allocation, has it considered the municipal boundaries? If it doesn't consider the municipal boundaries, definitely going to create a huge conflict or conflict of interest in terms of the municipality, and they looking in terms of benefiting from the collection of the rent. Because it must be a charity or a clear state in terms of the operation of the rent, and how are the municipalities going to benefit. That's why I also asked when the conversation with the SAGA or with the municipality, was there any strictly consultation in terms of their interest, in terms of benefit? The other question, Chair, is related to the issue of tariffs. That one of your slides, I don't know what slides were there, but it says to able EDI infrastructure. Speaking in terms of the tariffs and in ensuring the appropriate investment, you must be able to give the tariffs here to say how are they going to monitor the tariffs, because the presentation that we're given, or that the world is going to have a common or strict line of tariffs, but there'll be no this variety of different tariffs that are going to be allocated in municipalities. But also it's still going to consider in ensuring that the vulnerable people in the ground, they are not suffering. Because we must be able to ensure that the poor people, they are not taken for the right out of this concept. They really benefit. But also the issue of the monitoring of the terrorists, I'm trying to check, because we also receive the impression that NERPA is willing to monitor this terrorist strictly with the municipalities, although they present a different picture to us, but very clearly that these are municipalities. They are not being monitored just for regulating the terrorists. How are we going to ensure that NERPA also comply with, the EDI comply with the issues of terrorists? Because you don't want to see general people at the ground suffering. The last one said, let me just put it there. But the issue of the issue of one of your slides, the model, where you say to ensure the new neutrality of the current status quo. I wanted to get a clarity to say, how will you be able to figure out this over time? Because I can't understand, I don't understand clearly, but be able to clarify to me, how do you feel about this over time? And how is it going to also benefit people? Because usually sometimes when you say you feel over time, I don't know if you feel over time in terms of the labor not working over time, but also how do you also ensure that there's consistency in terms of people receiving electricity and not having any challenge? If I can get a challenge of that.
So, there are just two questions. One is you have mentioned that the implication of this bill will be more than the risks that I agree with you. Then how do we find that implication going to other areas over and above the city at local government level? I wonder if I mentioned that question. because it is only related to the power as it relates to the race. And what about other activities? What power of intervention? Where will the power of intervention come from? Or are we going to be making one piece of legislation for each country and each country is doing? The other question is the area of comparison. This is your second but last, the proposed content. There is an area of comparison there in your point, unit 1, 2, 3, 4. The appointment by the municipalities of RED as service providers. What are we going to be putting the IPPs at in this particular context? Thank you.
Thanks. Those are questions, but also one the question of the consultation. If I hear when I'm not familiar with the proper funding, they say once you give the legislation, then there will be no need to engage in the discussion. It is confusing. I thought they used the word going anywhere. But surely there are some, there's a lot of internal issues that are not like the same. So I'm not sure if all your members are at the same time going to be able to perform the talk. As I said, after hearing your input, it seems that we can't agree with us. We all the things. The implementation of ways I think is correct. So I'm not sure. Maybe I might be wrong. But my assumption is that it seems to be very and there are a lot of other people.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and go through the questions with the big members they came. Starting with the question about the blanket power that seems to be given through the constitutional amendment, as opposed to focusing on the water and electricity functions. Chair, you have to forgive me, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that electricity reticulation, same as water reticulation, are embedded in the constitution, shape or form. So you would have to deal with that change in the constitution. When the technical team got together, they looked at the number of options to effect the same intent. And one of the options that was considered was a very radical deletion of the number of where you would expunge those elements in Schedule 4B that did not belong there. For example, that you would take out electricity levels. But it upset a whole lot of other things in the Constitution we were applied to the technical. So it was more like the technical team got together and settled, gravitated towards this, less radical, changing of the Constitution. And it was a PD government that to enhance government regulatory functions that way. But Chair, I think the point is taken, and maybe that is part of the issues that would be teased out and sharpened in the consultation through the parliamentary process. But I think the intention is that you want to achieve a particular outcome. There is no contradiction, Chair, between what I have indicated around surcharges. Chair, we need to make a distinction between municipal mandates in the Constitution. You might be familiar with the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act that was promulgated in 2008. sorry, 2007.
Yes,
2007. In terms of which national treasury will have the ability to regulate the surcharges that municipalities would apply on the different services. So that is where we say that the surcharges regulatory process is an instrument in the hands of national treasury that would be used as one of those elements to augment municipal revenue. Okay, because what you have at the moment is a situation where some municipal surcharges are way over the top. They call them surcharges because they're running away from calling it that. So the surcharge would be very high. And what treasury needs to achieve is to regulate the surcharge. But we say, if you regulate that, there will be a process of redistribution. So those that might suffer revenue loss as an outcome of this process, that one instrument that could be used is surcharge. That's the one. Now we say that in the model, there might well be additional instruments that are used in order to compensate those revenue losses over and above the surcharges. I think that's the difference here. We're not just looking at surcharges, there are other instruments, and I think what EDR Holdings was referring to, Honorable Smith, related to related to the fact that there might be other instruments, and the example that was given is this one about the interest-bearing debt that, instrument that could be used to then compensate. So we must not put too much on the detail about the instrument. I think it's the principles as well that relate to the fact that you don't want to make municipalities lose their revenue just willingly. You want them to make sure that you compensate. And how you compensate is a function of the various instruments that are available. One of them is surcharges, and there's a whole lot of other instruments that are being used. As I said, in fairness, I think what we might have to do is to come back and go through a model that shows precisely how the compensation, the balancing, and the viability, more importantly, is going to work. In other words, we are confident that based on the modeling work that has been done, this is not just shooting in the dark. We are precisely, well, not precisely, but we are well aware of some of the risks that relate to revenue losses and how they could be compensated. Regarding leaving the tough things with the municipalities and then trying to cream off the easy ones there, I believe it's the other way around. So this is one of the toughest functions that we need to provide, particularly given where we at right now. In fact, we have seen a degradation of municipal infrastructure over the years, and at this point, it has got to a position where if we do not do something about it, it is going to become, you know, it's reaching a point of no return if it hasn't done that already. So this is not an easy, you know, function that we're just creaming off and then leaving the tough ones. I think that is certainly not the intention. The intention is that you want to benefit from economic scale and ensuring that the service is provided in the manner that it should. A municipality is not going to overcharge and so on as a function or as a consequence of the trade process. If I understood the question correctly, the point is that municipalities are largely overcharging at the moment. They are overcharging in the electricity sector, certainly. They are under recovery in other sectors. In fact, we are very convinced that municipalities are under recovery insofar as water services are concerned. But what you have is one big bag where everything gets lumped together and you have aggregations. So what they lose on the water side, they just recover on the electricity side. And that is bad for economic regulation. Because what you want is to make sure that each service, each utility service, can stand on its own And to the extent that it cannot stand on its own, we would use cross-fertilization principles that are transparent. So you don't just want to compensate, and you don't know the level of compensation, because that does not make for a sustainable service delivery model. Regarding the shareholding in the RIF, I apologize if that was a little bit confusing, but it is a process. On day one, everybody that contributes assets into the RIF would have shareholding. ESCOM would have shareholding, municipalities would have shareholding. But what the intention is that you would migrate towards a process where ESCOM shareholding in the RIF diminishes. So you would start with a situation where the municipalities would have a much larger shareholding in the RIF than what ESCOM and or where ESCOM would start at the beginning. And the reality of that is the fact that there is a legacy issue. ESCOM currently owns a certain percentage of the electricity distribution function, and that's the point that, you know, they will start at a very or at a higher shareholding than what you want to achieve as you are saying. Municipal boundaries, have they been considered? And there are two dimensions to this question, if I understood it correctly. Municipal boundaries will be disregarded insofar as providing the service by the RIF is concerned. RIF straddle municipal boundaries, RIF do not respect municipal boundaries. The electricity function is not provided among municipal boundaries. All your power stations, or a predominant number of your power stations, sit in Mpumalanga. You can imagine if we wanted to do that or cut that along political boundaries. What would happen is that you have excellent service, very cheap tariffs in Mpumalanga, and those that sit here in the Western Cape would have to pay through their name. So what you do is you provide a sort of a cross-subsidized function that does not respect municipal boundaries. However, the second dimension of this question is the fact that you respect municipal boundaries insofar as the benefits and the redistribution is concerned. So the RIF makes, you know, the RIF derives those benefits at the national level, but in terms of distribution now, it's distributed on the basis that respect municipal boundaries. The tariff and appropriate investment, Chair, without going into the technical details, tariff setting is for monopolies like an electricity utility is a function that vests with the regulator, everything being equal. What we have in South Africa is a situation where the regulator's power and function to regulate electricity tariffs is tempered by municipal power to regulate their own. So you have a situation where the regulator is independent in relation to ESCOM ESCOM as a distributor, but you have a conflict of interest situation between the municipality as a service provider. They also regulate itself. So they referee and player in that. And what we seek to do here is to provide the distinction between any separate entity having the necessary authority to regulate a monopoly as well. Chair, the appropriate investment relates to the fact that now when you approve that tariff, embedded in the tariff allowance, so for example, if a tariff is 50 cents, you'll find that a certain fraction of that tariff allowance is earmarked for reinvestment. So you get allowed 20 cents in the 30 cents, as an example, to go and build more lines, go and improve your maintenance, and so on and so forth. But what happens is that that money gets collected, but it does not then get used for the intended purpose. And therefore, you don't have the same level of investment. In fact, a study recently indicated that with a 27 billion rand backlog in investment, you would have to have a certain threshold of allowance in the tariff in order to eliminate that backlog over a certain period of time from the tariff. Now, you can imagine, we're constantly going backwards in that. So it's 27 billion and it's growing all the time. So if you're collecting money but you're not reinvesting in that entity, in that utility service, despite the fact that you do have an allowance that is meant for that reinvestment, you're going to just go backward. And that is what we say you want you to do by allowing appropriate investment through the tariff. And then obviously the golden question is around how we're going to cushion the poor and the vulnerable in the midst of all of this. Is that at the moment, I think that is the starting point. At the moment, there are two instruments. The one is called free basic electricity, with its own challenges as to how it gets implemented. And the jury is still out, but there is a sense that it is not a sharp enough instrument to cushion the poor. Not so much because the principles are false or are misguided, but simply because at the implementation model, you find different ways to ensure equality in the city. I come from Pretoria. In Pretoria, everybody gets, whether you qualify or not, and I believe that is the same. So we have a lot of leakage and so on. That's the one instrument that can be sharpened through this intervention. The second instrument relates to the actual tariff itself. Our electricity pricing policy provides that you could have block tariffs, in other words, set producers in blocks. And that way, even when Eskom tariffs go 100% up, you would be able to provide a tariff for those that have been identified as vulnerable. Right. So when there's a 34% increase, you don't just give 34% across the board, like what happened 3 months ago. You literally put electricity users in different categories, and you would charge those that need to be charged in the manner that is appropriate, as opposed to just averaging out right there. That is a function of how, you know, or the function, this is the rationale why we want to strengthen NERSA's ability to regulate despite the other conflicting mandates with municipalities. I have touched on the issue of revenue neutrality and so on, but in practice, there has been a modeling exercise that was concluded first, and in terms of that modeling exercise, you will be able to see how revenue neutrality can be achieved through the various instruments that I have referred to. Because you're 100% right, as we do all of this, you want to keep the lights on. It's not like we're saying, Chair, that it's going to take 3 years, as you indicated, and during that time, please brace yourself for backup. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that you can do this at the same time as keeping the lights on. The lights will go off for other reasons. And those reasons relate to the supply side, in other words, not enough power at the power station generated by Eskom, which is a problem that is being addressed. However, because it's the same value chain, even if we have all the power generated, if we can't solve the distribution problem, we will be in the dark. And that is what we're trying to address through this initiative. And then there's the issue around the implications of the RED process. How do we take this beyond electricity to other services? Chair, just to indicate that we only speak for the electricity sector, but Chair, it is common knowledge that there are problems in the way that water services are being provided, and there are parallels between what we're trying to do in the electricity sector with what obtains in the water and sanitation sector. But yes, honourable member, you are 100% correct that there would be separate legislation in respect of each of those other functions. So the amendment of the constitution would be an enabling tool but it would have to be followed by appropriate legislation in respect of each of those functions. Compulsion to appoint rates as service provider. Just a small technical point. We are talking here about the function called reticulation, which is defined distinctly from another function called generation. Generation is a function that is not, or rather that is not included in the Schedule 4B of the Constitution, so it is not a municipal function. So IPP, so independent power producers, those that want to generate the municipality, will not be affected by this. They're just a separate process altogether. We're talking here just about the wire business that goes into your houses. So the time frame for all of this, as indicated, we're hoping that the constitutional amendment process starts in Parliament. Depending on the outcome of that process, we believe that we can have a very quick turnaround, not in this cycle, but in the next cycle for the EDI restructuring legislation. So I think by next year, we should have clarity as to how quickly we can introduce that. But I share with your assistance, we might be able to process it. It has been drafted. It has not been, in fact, it had been taken out for public consultation the first time, and there were serious concerns about how it was not congruent with the provisions of the Constitution, and that we have to deal with the Constitution first before we introduce the legislation. So, Chair, we are in the hands of the public consultation process and all of that as to the timeline. But just to give some indication, I think 18 months is more feasible.
18 months?
Yes. In other words, to conclude and to we have already introduced the amendment into the parliamentary process. We need to respect that process, and that process hopefully will be concluded in the cycle. When that process has been concluded, the process of introducing the rate amendment, the rate establishment bill, can follow, you know, immediately thereafter. And I'm just suggesting that you know, maybe early next year we can introduce the rate establishment bill, subject to the parliamentary process giving the right direction. As I indicated, the constitutional amendment process is in Parliament under the auspices of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And all I'm indicating is that the outcome of the constitutional amendment is an input to the rate establishment bill. So if it is done, say, by the end of this year, then we are ready. We can introduce the rate establishment bill. So it is not within our control to dictate that pace. We are ready. We can start tomorrow. But we have to go through.
I didn't hear that kind of representation, but there's a long, nice thing, you know, with all it takes, but falling short of saying this is what I expect. What we want to avoid this thing of, we must start moving in the implementation rate. That's our level of patience in this department. And now, to me, it goes back to the input that when that other week when this Mr. was telling me, you were asking me, will the rest be operational before this test? Let's say it might not be feasible because the engineer that are reaching out and telling us that one is supposed to be the rest, and then one of them will have to be the we cannot, because we are living up to 2012 or 2018, and whatever, 14, 15, our money is 5 years in, and 14 years to get in another parliament. But what is this is implemented in the law of yesterday. That's the level of agency. So again, I mean, at times you said that you can't use it because you are here, I can't use it, I've been invited to come to the case. That's not what you hear from you, what you seem to ask. Here, they've done all what they are mandated to do. They've done the level of responsibility. You, the department, meaning that you are doing the whole process and the whole thing here. And that is a concern through your presentation to the field. So if what is your time to describe?
If I can just give some details, the constitutional amendment process is the so-called Section 74. Now, in terms of the process which we have introduced into the parliamentary process, there is a consultation process at the NCOP. Let's assume that the committee passes this, it gets approved by the National Assembly. It has to go through the NCOP. When it gets to the NCOP, there has to be a consultation process with the provinces. And that consultation process with the provinces will take at least 2 months, because first of all, it has to be published for consultation, and then it has to be, those comments have to be considered. And then when it has been considered, the NCOP must, present their position back to them. Now, all I'm saying is that is a process that depends on Parliament. It does not depend on us. We are not in a position to say how long it's going to take. But that's what I'm saying, that in 18 months, it's a safe kind of time frame within which we can say that all of that would have been clear, and then we would be able to introduce the legislation or promulgate the legislation. I'm not suggesting, Chair, that there are certain things that depend on us that we have not done. We have done the establishment, the constitutional amendment legislation in Parliament. Through the stable advisor, it's been approved by Cabinet. We have done that. And it's now up to Parliament to determine just how quickly they can do that. And if they say to us tomorrow, we will be able to respond tomorrow. But unfortunately, the due process is that it has to go back to the provinces, it has to go through. And that's what informs the 18-month process that I'm talking about.
Well,
the Malays, the running right through the fabric of South Africa, and we are no longer being able to collect even the basic things. We said to me that there are many, many people amongst us who can afford to pay their water account, their electricity account, but they are not paying. Why? How is this going to happen? And finally, Chair, and this is just a comment, I would still like to see any law or regulation that can be passed and will give anybody revenue neutral. If that's what you want to be doing, you know. And that's what I understand in proposition. Why do you need to would want to see something better? If they get to the city, it's going to be better than where they are. But if you think it's going to be very neutral, hey, what are they doing? Thank you.
Thank you. Time is very short. I think one lesson that we learned from the red one and the result in the liquidation. I'm hoping that the things that we have learned from there we're not going to repeat. The other one is that Eskom and municipalities will transfer their electricity distribution, assets, liabilities, and employees. I'm so worried about the liabilities. I think the previous speaker mentioned that. But the employee, if Red got any inherent employees, I'm sure they should have the liberty to be able to say employees they're employed. Because if you take that all, then you push back 20 years. You need to improve on that, you need to get more better skills and numbers also. The other one was that national authority to will be the entire utility industry will have to comply. I'm a bit concerned here because if that is out of line, automatically the red will be out of line. We even know the red would like to try and assist in reducing the price of the utility. But they will be governed by this other party. Or will the red have any influence on the party?
Maybe it is like myself, official. There are friends who want to intention of the EDI in the project. We want to speed up the process of providing the electricity effectively and cheaper to the people. If you can just get that clear in your mind, you will refrain yourself from giving us long-term plans. You see, you can't come and shade yourself in the implementation of this right by the process of Parliament. So, can't just say, no, Parliament must take this process. We know our process in Parliament. And we know that if we go and sit in a criminal motion party, and we'll be able to agree to say this right must be implemented well. That's not a problem. What we want from you is for you to tell us what is your EPA, what is the estimated time that you want this right to be implemented. The presentation that we got from the EDI was to say by Darawabi it can be implemented. Yourself, it seems like you're not clear in terms of what is the intention of this. Maybe you should be able to go back and consult with your job description in terms of what is your role and what is your job and what you do to work and match the resolution that you're doing. You must give me a chance here. This is one of the questions that I, you know, also raised to you. You must be able to explain to me how you understand that at the current moment you've got a crisis that is called want to raise one bigger percentage than the night. And our understanding is that the implementation of the rent would be able to protect the poor and the vulnerable. I don't know that I have got the very same understanding with you, but you must be able to explain to me what is the impact will it be when the right implementation is taking place. How will the 40% that is expected by ESCOM, you know, affect us? Because at the current moment, because this crisis that ESCOM wants to raise is high sky abroad. And poor people are going to suffer. And if we did not receive from EDI that the implementation of rent will provide cheaper electricity and address this effective health of this electricity. That's all.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Lucas asked about the red wine. What has been? I thought because when we started talking about red wine, a public consultation was done. Are we really going to start again afresh when it really pushes us to 18 months? I was wondering if EDI wants to continue to do it last week, the other week before, we had the budgetary department in the department. It was a chair of the board, and the CEO and the CEO and stuff. Yeah, so I think you also welcome this one. It's not going to say anything quite. We did the thing to the department, we came to the president to participate in the comments. You want to come in a situation where you want to be able to comment on the yes. Mr. Fahmy, you look at your first problem and you will come up.
Chair, the first question is around related to the motivation and the value proposition around rates and whether it will make electricity cheaper and so on. So what we're saying is that electricity is not cheap in Lucina to the extent that it should be. You have a situation where in some instances, as I've indicated, the approach to applying tariffs is on no sound economic basis. That is what we're trying to address. And there is process, particularly the aspect of this process that relates to strengthening the regulatory oversight role of government in relation to municipality. That is the function that if it is achieved or instituted, we will be able to drive all of those austerities out of the system, where you have probably an 80 cent kilowatt hour tariff in Lucina for some reason and perhaps half of that less than 300 kilometers away. So that is what the proposition is based on value and economics. I think that is our rationale for that. In terms of whether this would, again, the value proposition in terms of whether it would alleviate poverty. And that is precisely the point, that you will be able to use those two instruments more sharply, those that are spoken about. Free basic electricity, number one, but also the ability to provide tariffs for the poor. At the moment, the municipality dictates what those tariffs are and what they should be without any oversight by NERSA to the extent that they should be oversight. And regarding whether a law has been passed to make municipalities or to make what that will likely result in revenue neutrality, we're not saying that this would make that this would be a revenue neutral proposition. We're saying revenue neutrality is what we're trying to achieve and suggesting how we're going to achieve. We recognize that, yes, if the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act is implemented, those surcharges are going to be regulated, and as such, municipalities will not necessarily have the same revenue as what they had before. So what we're suggesting is how to then deal with the fact that there will be that loss of revenue. In terms of employee transfers and all of that, we will undertake the process within the confines of the Labour Relations Act and so on, which means that, you know, you would respect those contracts that would be in place regarding employees and so on. But I think even further than that is the fact that the intention is not to create job losses out of this process, but to try and achieve skills economies of scale, so to speak. In other words, where if you have to share certain skills, it is not confined to the metros, because this is where the skills gravitate to us, but that skill within the metro can also be shared by a rural utility and so on. The question about ETA, the expected time of arrival, what I've merely indicated is that, we have, it would be prudent to work on the basis of an 18-month kind of time frame. Chair, I would be out of line to make promises at this committee, and I respect the urgency of the matter and so on, but I'm not in a position to promise that it can be done by January next year. But what I've also tried to do is to indicate what those elements in the process are, and it certainly is not a question of the department trying to play. We have done everything that we need to do, and there's a whole lot of other external dependencies that should be respected. Do we still need a public participation process? Chair, that is in the Constitution, and if you make laws, unfortunately, you have to go through a public consultation process. What might happen in this case, Honorable Matibela, is that it might not be the same level, the same level of exhaustive, a public participation process as if the process started now. I mean, this process has been ongoing for a very long time. Thank you. And then the question about the lessons from the race one experience. Yes, that has certainly been taken into account. That is precisely why we will be a little bit careful about introducing race first and then trying to solve this problem. So, which is what happened with the red one, where we created an entity and then tried to back solve for the rest of the other elements. In this case, what we're saying is that we want to solve all of these problems, and then at the end, the outcome might be a lot more painful, but it would be a lot more sustainable than with the red one process.
Okay, I'm not sure whether I had you also raise my question, which I've answered about the appointment that we started over the last I'm just sure the intention of the concern is to make the national level and the regional level and then there will be another when the whole thing is out and then why have you
the question was around compulsion to appoint rates as service providers and how this would affect independent power producers. And I indicated that independent power producers would not be affected because it is a generation function, it is not a distribution function, and as such, they would be completely insulated from this process. But in terms of the compulsion itself, yes, indeed, that is the intention that you want to make it compulsory for rates to be the service provider for sure.
A collective type of an approach, not to use the impact of the points and things for others, but collectively as well as the EDI to use. Why did you use the different part? Maybe it's a different measure of the challenge.
Maybe. Do you want to do that? So you check, please, the main address to detail of the implementation that EDI has indicated.
I think we actually have to invite that to be part of the presentation as well. But I think the first point said, jokingly, I did say that what that was to say, the process of implementation should be yesterday. And in the title of the portfolio of the MFS, we can't finish the term of office of the EDI in terms of the project. My personal appointment in December last year for 3 years with no proper progress in terms of implementation of that. So I would say the detail of how long it will take, we would have to, I think, regard the BDI with respect to the process relating to the department presentation in terms of what is the message taken. There will be leadership from the portfolio committee relating to certain things relating to how you work with other departments around constitutional amendments and how you work around the issue of establishment fee. So, Chair, one would like to say the speeding up of the process is what you all agree upon. That we have delayed in terms of implementation is the part that we have more than just agreed to. And anything that can be done to get the process is fully supported from the EDI side. I think from the perspective, the second point here, I think the issue which was raised earlier of the reason for restructuring is a point where I think we're looking at that as quality. There are challenges we have the service now in different areas in terms of quality of service that we provide. Even if there might be reasonable challenges on the issues, they are more than 1,000. They are already in terms of structural challenges now. Very poor communities become overtaxed. But you would find as well there are areas in terms of organized business where you would say it's reasonably low because they would actually be able to afford more. So I'm actually placing a point here to say when you look at the range of tariffs, more than 2,000 of them. Look at who is charged what tariff. That is actually an area that is structured. You might find if you should correct within that framework, there may be lots of issues that would assist space for us to be able to provide for those who are poor and do not have access to the service. But I would say efficiencies on how we deliver the service would help a great deal because most of the people are impeded and are poor may not be as a top contractor base and services within the local area of the capital. But you might find that indigents who are not registered who do not receive the service. And obviously the income of electricity, which is one of the issues which I find important, which is received and used for other services in the municipality, does create a challenge of reinvestment to sustain the service in capital. So, Chairperson, if you allow me, I would request maybe further comments by the CEO around some of the details which have been raised before the question. Thank you.
So,
Chairman,
I just want to clarify some of the areas that
EDI was defined as 1.5%. And I've got a few issues, and I'll start with the first one. In our presentation, the EDI we actually said they will collect surcharges in accordance with the Constitutional Power of Taxes Act 2007 on behalf of the municipality and state overdues. This was presented yet in our presentation at the government. The department has indicated that the municipalities will retain their power to apply surcharges in terms of Section 229 of the Constitution. Now, Section 229 of the Constitution, then, municipalities have been obliged to give the surcharges. They recognize that, they recognize the national president, and you pass a law for the municipal power and funding that to assist the municipality to tax. So, they just say that all we say is that they are going to it will then be collected by them on behalf of, so that's a very comprehensible, on behalf of the municipality and the students, because we will be providing the services of the city collecting those funds. So, there's a money that we get in the list. It belongs to the municipality, it's not a set of revenue and paid over to them. So that's fair to say that we are on the same page in that regard to this fund. And on the issues of dividends as well, I think the Chairman did say that dividends will be paid to the municipality. We did say so as well. All we said was that that's different was that the dividends will be paid later, because dividends are what shareholders make out of the business. But if the business is not performing the way it's supposed to be performing, given the state of the infrastructure, that will be paid later. But again, there's a question there. And then how do we sort out the issue of funding? How do we make funding the same? We, SDR, we have been developing an approach, and essentially, we're looking at the process of harmonizing tariffs, and we look at the period of years, and say how long it takes to harmonize tariffs from this point to that point, and when. With the guidance of GASMA to say this is where the tariffs are, we have to take them here in this particular time, and that's how we then work with some sort of license conditions to enable us to work with it over a period of time. So that overtime issue is not overtime one, it's over a period of time. So whether or not the rate level of time is a sort of operation issue, and the rate of quality is just and I think here, well, you think that the municipalities will be able to continue to access the health control device that they utilize the 24 currently. So, yes, that's not the ideal way of collecting and find out something currently not happening. So, if your municipal bill comes out, it's the number of those. You have to say to others, the municipalities don't have to pick up the system to continue to stay. But I just want to point out that there are entities that are collecting property out there in the same community that the municipalities are already present. Our sense is that there isn't enough of sharing of good experiences. Community of service in the East India Group is a combination of different technologies plus community consultation that resulted in the municipality of the community being able to collect up to 98% of that community. And yet, we know the same municipality has a standard living at home, so they don't collect as high as that. So, there are a number of good practices, which are the municipality of Malan, but it's not a method. But somehow, we're not self-combination, so we think that the regions will be better able to ensure that these good practices are spread across the country so that we overall have the actual collection. Because MCN and NL will collect the same community. The self-service is in the same community. So, the life lessons are going to be learned from those service providers. And on the point of regional service providers, why regional service providers? The current constitutional amendment says that national government, through legislation, will further regulate the exercise of the regional authority by the municipality. If we have gone for an amendment that says delete the separate regulation from Section 4 of the Constitution, that would make the separate regulation a national function, then it wouldn't matter how national government organizes itself because it's no longer going to be a separate function. But the current proposal of the table says leave the separate regulation from Section 4 of the Constitution as a municipal function. But we will tell them how to provide the benefit, by direction in other institutions that they will present to the provided program through this particular agency. So we have the access method, the other one, and that is the best we can come from, but that's a current constitutional amendment that we're debating. And our access method is the first level of standard against the ground. Why not go for the women's looking at what the other but the last week the other step for the parliament now, and then we have to and that's the last thing I was thinking of the medical commission. I think when I want to use an analogy here. When local government consolidation happens, there were certain issues raised on the root of the site, as a result of the consolidation of local government for 1,000 and 1,000 and I think today in the country we all agree that there has been benefits of the consolidation of local government. And although there are challenges, but services are better provided given the fact that we have consolidated. So all we're saying is that the 187 municipal density system is ultimately for active and economic objectives within the resource sector, so we do need better consolidation in that case. And in time, we will be able to demonstrate the benefits because we will be setting the right from the beginning. So I hope that covers some of the areas that the students and others have to do.
You are making a field with a lot of variety, So, when do we hear from you guys? We can't just be getting here and saying you're waiting for the results. So we give you a mandate to go get one. And talk to the National Department and even to manage the staff so you are better to participate the week. So that we can have some progress before the school is here. It's September, which is in September. We have so much of been around to November. But when I come back from the education, I'm coming there.
Okay, we will take a note and what would one propose is that we consult with our colleagues at Justice and also we would want to propose that we inform the committee by way of a letter. If that is acceptable as to what the plan for fast tracking is on the side of the Department of Justice for the Justice Committee.
They are not free. Because the Justice Commission did not meet all the requirements that the three commissioners did. So if you are supposed to help with them, how far are they? What is saying is that fast track the whole process. The goal is to talk to the other, I don't know if you can start or whatever, but talk to them, but we need some fast track mechanism to be taught. It is the thing that we can pass to the life of it. Unless it depends on them and say this is what I want. I put it in, we want to see implementation, and that's our top and our issues. So we start you guys to go and do that.
On our side, we will do our best, but we also would want to request some assistance from the committee in as far as you know any consultation can be you know facilitated from within Parliament, because I think the challenge that we have is that as officials, one. People, you know, in the parliamentary process, you know, there's, you know, really very little that we can do. However, we will go back and report to our principals. And what I would want to propose is the written feedback to the committee as to, you know, what plan then can come out of that consultation process. I think they need a dependency on this one because I believe that it will help to involve the Minister of Energy. The Minister of Energy. And I wouldn't be able to, can, you know, I can just say as soon as possible, I wouldn't be able to give an indication as opposed to matters that are administrative, that are within our control. I believe that this one clearly has moved beyond the administrative. You know, area of responsibility.
What is
I think that every day it has to be proper for the committee to indicate to us. Issues around illegal connection, cable theft, finally, the issue relating to
those who can afford to pay, not pay. But those are kind of medium issues that maybe the community can have a great deal, but maybe under the program of energy efficiency, they are still approved. So outside issues related to the institutional government or companies, but it is in terms of actually investment or electricity infrastructure, maintenance issues over and above that. Issues of energy efficiency are very clear. The way it's not possible to come to work are very crucial. Thank you.
Okay. Do you want to
do
something?
Not supplement, but a suggestion or focus that you mentioned four key sub items energy which I suggest that we
The acting DG who was previously in charge of electricity is a woman, and the person who drafted the LPG regulation that it will be presenting to the committee is a woman. So we do accept it. We are not there yet, but we are getting there very fast. Very
fast.
Thanks for the compliment.
We don't control the
yeah.